Let me tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com, and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order, and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly opportunity to answer your questions. You can send listener questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And today we're here with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin answering your questions. So what's our next question, please, Layla?
This question comes from Laura. My husband had his first, and I hope his last, episode with a bleeding ulcer. It took two separate endoscopies to get the bleeding to stop, as well as a week in the hospital and 3 units of blood.
Wow.
That's really something. Any way to...
Okay, so first of all, this is something that is sort of an anomaly these days. It used to happen very frequently when I was doing my medical training, before the advent of really powerful acid-blocking drugs. Mm-hmm. Now these acid-blocking drugs They virtually put surgeons out of business, but surgeons came up with another way to make money, which is to do bariatric surgery. The same surgeons who used to take out stomachs now do gastric bypasses. So they manage to, you know, just like ENT doctors, they don't do tonsils anymore. They do now ear tubes. You know, so it's like they figured out another way to remain active. So. Really want to trace the reason for this and the reasons for ulcers that recur.
One really jumps out at me: the chronic use of NSAIDs.
Absolutely. And I mean, the worst life-threatening bleeding ulcers that I saw, and people would come crashing in the ambulance with like half their blood volume, bleeding like crazy, and you know they would have been. They would usually tell a story like, you know, I had a backache and I was taking, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug and bang, you know, I threw up blood or I felt faint and then I passed a bowel movement that was bright red. Mm-hmm. So,
or completely black.
Or black tarry stool. Black tarry stool. But it's usually black tarry stool is actually because the bright red usually occurs when you have like a proctitis or when you have a hemorrhoid or a fissure. So you're right. Mm-hmm. It's black tarry stool, but really black, not dark brown. So the other cause is the bacteria, Helicobacter, which can
make
ulcers come back. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, if you have a true ulcer, it's warranted to treat the Helicobacter either naturally or with a combination of drugs. They have something called PrevPak, which is a combination of, I think, two or three antibiotics, along with an acid blocker, and that's used to treat Helicobacter.
But that comes with a consequence.
Absolutely. It does.
Yeah. I've heard of at least a handful of patients who come complaining of after that triple antibiotic therapy for the H. pylori, they now have GERD, which they didn't have before.
Well, and that's because, as you know, H. pylori is causative of ulcers, but it's protective against GERD.
Friend or foe.
Yeah, what I really am opposed to, this is a little segue, is the screening for H. pylori. Like, oh, well, let's do a test. We'll see if you have H. pylori. Well, I'm fine. Yeah, well, let's do a test anyway because H. pylori is bad and we'll get rid of it. Well, doctor, I didn't ask you to get rid of it. Well, no, it's bad for you. It might lead to stomach cancer. Well, only very rarely is it a risk factor for stomach cancer.
Yeah.
And treating it can, when you don't have, I mean, if you have bleeding ulcers, it's definitely warranted to treat it.
Sure.
And, you know, recurrent ulcers especially that don't get better. And then, you know, there's another possibility that you may have some sort of, some kind of vascular malformation in the stomach, there are sometimes areas where instead of the capillaries interceding between arteries and veins, sometimes there's what's called an AV, an arteriovenous malformation, that can cause a place where there's a susceptibility to bleed.
Mm.
And that's anatomical, And, you know, that can be treated surgically or cauterized mm-hmm. in some way to kind of spot weld that area, like they do with people who have hemorrhages in their eyes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what's causing this guy's chronic ulcers. I don't know what he eats. I don't know whether he takes NSAIDs. I don't know whether he has H. pylori.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he's extraordinarily stressed. I mean, there is such a thing as stress ulcers. You know, so we don't mm-hmm. know.
We don't know. How do we
is he
treat
on a blood?
Ulcers?
Is he on a blood thinner?
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean. You know.
Yeah.
Because
well,
because or prednisone. Prednisone is a risk factor too. If you're on prednisone, you
really?
Can get ulcers. Yeah.
That I didn't know.
Yeah. In fact, sometimes they automatically give you an acid blocker when you're on prednisone,
mm-hmm.
which means that there's two ways you're going to get osteoporosis. You're going to get osteoporosis from the prednisone, and then you're taking an acid blocker, which you know makes you malabsorb nutrients, and
yeah.
then you're double trouble for osteoporosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, do we know anything more about this case?
No, okay. That's about it. Hopefully he will be on an ulcer diet, which is, you know,
we'll talk about that,
low
yeah.
in anything spicy.
What would you do? So this guy comes and he's getting, you know, he's on an acid blocker
mm-hmm.
and the bleeding is stabilized, but we don't mm-hmm. want the ulcer to come back. So what would we
do? We would take away anything that's irritating the stomach lining. They would be anything spicy, any very fatty or rich or deep fried foods would be one thing. Taking away possibly tomato products because tomatoes may be irritating, possibly removing caffeine or caffeinated beverages. Not just about the caffeine, it's more about the acid, mm-hmm. like in coffee and in tea. It's less about the caffeine and more about the acid. And there is low acid coffee
right.
out there, so there are ways to still enjoy your coffee but keep it low acid. We like supplements like mastic gum.
Right. Especially if there's H. pylori.
Mm-hmm.
Zinc carnosine is something mm-hmm. that's helpful. There's some discussion about cabbage juice or what's
called cabbage juice,
which contains something they call vitamin U,
uh-huh.
which is not really a vitamin, but it's some property that helps heal. We would also use Endofen, probably.
Yes.
Which, tell people what that is.
Endofen contains
plantain.
Apple.
Pectin,
and as well as some EGCG. It helps with the repair of the gastric
right.
mucosa. DGL is helpful too.
Licorice.
As an emollient. So all of that.
Uh-huh.
All of that would be good. And any NSAIDs you ever take, first of all, your doctor will probably tell you don't take that, take Tylenol instead.
Right.
But no matter what you take, you should take it on a full stomach if mm-hmm. you need a pain reliever or anything
Speaking
like
of
that.
Which, they just came out with a study on Tylenol.
Mm.
Tylenol does absolutely nothing for backache.
Oh.
So that's why when some people just don't find that Tylenol floats their boat
huh.
for the kind of pain they have, and they rely on NSAIDs,
mm-hmm.
and then, lo and behold, they get these kind of problems sometimes.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for your question, Laura.
Sure.
And best of luck to your husband. Ah. This next question is from Cheryl, who's very confused. I just heard after listening to Fox News today that it's not good to be eating any kind of oils anymore. No olive oil,
well,
no coconut.
If it's on Fox News, it must be true.
It must be true,
right? I mean, they're like the authoritative source on all things real.
So apparently this was said by a Dr. Wallach on Fox News.
Who's not one of the science correspondents on Fox News. To their credit, I think Fox News has some pretty good... although, you know, mainstream science
mm-hmm.
Correspondents, they have a Saturday or weekend show, it's a Sunday show,
yeah.
with Dr. Ramadi, and he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And he really does his research, and he really is now getting into learning about nutrition.
Terrific.
I recently was on his radio show on a radio station in New York.
So,
Dr. Samadhi.
Yeah. So this Dr. Wallach was talking about not having oils anymore, and Cheryl gives her dogs coconut oil. And she has about 3 tablespoons of coconut oil a day. She uses olive oil on her salads with lemon.
So, you know, Dr. Wallach, I know of his writings, and he believes in certain oils.
Mm-hmm.
But
is
not
it true
others.
He's the dead doctors don't lie guy?
Thank you. Yeah, he's okay. Here's another thing. He doesn't have the greatest reputation for veracity because he came up with this thing that was a real headline grabber. It was this meme: dead doctors don't lie. And then he would like it was in his newsletter, And what he said was the average doctor dies at 53. So how could doctors dispense health advice to people if doctors died on average at 53? And to, you know, just on first glance, you might say...
Did he say that in the year 1920 or something?
No. This was like 5 years ago or eight years ago or something.
Okay.
But I thought to myself, yeah, you know, doctors are really stressed and, you know, doctors sometimes they commit suicide and, you know, they don't eat that well. But doctors really don't die at, I know he might have said 58 or 59, some incredibly young age.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I looked it up and the statistics are that doctors die at approximately the same age as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was basically to, you know, demean doctors because they're really, from their own personal health standpoint, their health is abysmal, so how can they possibly give advice to other people? And, I mean, to some extent, I agree that doctors often are obese. They don't follow the advice that they should purvey to their patients. They eat poorly. They're rushed. They're stressed.
Yeah.
I get it. But that was a plain, outright exaggeration.
Yeah. And many of them used to smoke.
And I'm really surprised that they put this... Maybe it was a commercial. I can't imagine that Fox would put them on their... You know, mm-hmm. in the editorial part of Fox. I mean, it might have been just a commercial that popped up. Because I've watched Fox from time to time. I've never seen him on there.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I wouldn't take it too seriously.
I wouldn't.
But so what's the story? I mean, we should stop. What do you think? We should stop using oils?
No, absolutely. We should continue using good oils like a good quality olive oil, coconut oil. All of these are good. Make sure they're reputable brands. Make sure they are what they are.
And is there such a thing as a bad oil?
Well, there's fraud. There's olive oil fraud.
Well, I mean, what about...
They're using sunflower oil, brands.
Yeah, what about, like, you know, safflower oil and sunflower oil and corn oil and all
that? Safflower, sunflower, corn oil are very, very pro-inflammatory. They're high in omega-3s. These are not good quality oils.
They're high in omega-6s.
Anyway, they're high in omega-6s.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you. I've been talking a lot today, I guess. So, yes, those vegetable oils should be put aside, but olive oil...
Right. So our take on this is that, you know, the only oils that you should limit are the refined oils...
Yes.
...that are often used in salad dressings
mm-hmm.
and in fried foods...
Yes.
...commercial fried foods.
Even light olive oil...
Right.
...you have to understand the processing that goes in to make that oil light.
Okay.
It's being bleached...
Right.
...it's being deodorized.
It's like white bread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why should we ingest that stuff?
Right. You know why? Because Americans can't hack the taste of olive oil. I have this artisanal olive oil.
Yeah,
and
you
it's great.
Drink
it's like $60 a bottle. You know,
uh-huh.
And there's a little warning on it. You know, is that you may find a certain piquancy or bitterness to the oil, but that's a signature of its beneficial. So they have to almost train the American palate to accept the flavorfulness of the olive oil.
I love a good, bold, fruity olive oil.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But
the rest of it is lubricant, that light stuff.
But I think Americans sometimes are not used to that, and they balk at it, so they want a very light olive oil, like it's neutral.
Yeah.
You know?
Meaning no flavor. I don't want any flavor in this oil or any kind of... No.
Right.
Not the way you use it.
The only flavors that they want are artificial flavorings. It's like natural flavorings that... No good.
Thank you.
So anyway, I wouldn't really give that much credence.
No. Cheryl, keep using your good quality olive oil and coconut oil. And that's that. Okay.
Yeah.
This next one comes from Joseph. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I recently saw my family physician and brought up the topic of supplements for prostates such as saw palmetto. My doctor advised me against saw palmetto, saying that it interferes with the testosterone pathway.
Mm-hmm.
I have an above-average testosterone level for my age group, and I would like to hear you weigh in on this topic.
Well, okay, so number one...
And he still uses your prostate formula.
You know, it's interesting because this doctor may have a double standard because medications that are used for the prostate, to shrink the prostate,
mm-hmm.
like Proscar... work in a way similar to saw palmetto, and they do block the bad testosterone, the
dehydrotestosterone,
which is thought to be the testosterone that's more responsible for hair loss and
mm-hmm.
also prostatic enlargement. So you can't have it both ways. You know, if that doctor says don't use saw palmetto, that doctor better say don't use Proscar or finasteride.
Mm.
On the other hand, you know, I actually think that sulpamid is a relatively weak blocker of the bad testosterone.
Yeah.
And so I don't really see that it's going to cause side effects. Like, what would happen if you really block testosterone? Well, it might reduce sex drive. It might reduce muscle mass. It might cause gynecomastia.
Yeah, but Joseph has an above average testosterone
anyway,
for his age group.
Anyway, so he might, yeah. You know, he has testosterone to burn,
There you go.
So I don't see it as a problem. And in fact, it might, I tell you, personal experience, I've been taking Saul Palmetto for ever since I've been about 30, every day, every single day.
I haven't lost a hair strand, probably.
Well, you can say, it's because I have no testosterone, but my testosterone's fine. All kidding aside, my experience is that Saul Palmetto, it's probably not the reason that I haven't lost hair, because a real nuisance problem that men have, almost invariably, and talking to the guys now, because the women, they have their own problems, but one of the worst aspects of getting older as a man is to have a prostate problem, which makes you want to go to the bathroom all the time, which makes you, have an incomplete urine stream, which can interfere with sexual functioning, and then could be dangerous and result in prostate cancer. So I said very early on, I do not want to go there, so I've been taking Sulpamedo preventively, and knock wood, it's been good.
Joseph, take your Saul Palmetto.
I would urge that,
yeah.
And by the way, men who have really serious prostate problems and very much enlarged prostates, it's too late. I think Saul Palmetto is something that works more preventively. It's not so helpful to reverse it. Then you have to use, the drugs.
Right. Best to be doing the right thing first, early on. Okay, good advice. Best of luck, Joseph. Okay.
So we have time for one more question.
We have time for one more, and this comes from Dean. Dr. Blaylock recommends we stay away from EPA. I know you recommend DHA, but should we stay away from EPA and look for products with more DHA?
So Doc, this is what we're referring to as fish oil, and the ratio of eicosapentaenoic acid to the docosahexaenoic acid, or DHA. So I have enormous respect for Dr. Blaylock, and he's a brilliant guy, and he's actually come up with the concept of neuroexcitation as a cause of neurological disease. So he's the guy who originally wrote that MSG and aspartame could be neuroexcitatory.
Yeah.
And I think he wrote a book called The Taste That Kills about MSG and aspartame. He's brilliant. And however, I don't think that it's warranted to say that we don't need EPA and we need to just take DHA. We're only beginning to understand the relative contributions of EPA and DHA. So we have different formulas. Some are DHA rich and some have just EPA and DHA in equal amounts, and some are more EPA and less DHA. In my opinion, may be that EPA is more anti-inflammatory and more immunosuppressive if we have an inflammatory or an autoimmune condition, like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, or ulcerative colitis.
That EPA would be more beneficial?
EPA might be more beneficial. But when it comes to the brain, I think DHA might be more the business end of the fish oil.
For
dementia, for vision, for breast milk, the mother should take DHA in pregnancy to facilitate.
To have a really smart kid.
Have a smart kid, and optimal brain development.
Uh-huh.
And, formula should be DHA enriched for babies, and babies should be taking, and small children, if you want a smart kid, you give them a little bit of, we have something called Core Omega, which is a pleasant-tasting omega-3.
There was a study a few years ago on children and increasing their DHA, and their behavior actually became better. They became
stabilized,
more polite.
Yes.
They were stabilized.
Well,
they were
might use that for
less rambunctious,
for ADD or autism or something like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So they're the ratio. One quibble, I did actually read a little bit on this, and one concern that Blaylock has with EPA is that EPA at very high doses could be a little immunosuppressive.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's not just a theoretical concern, like, you know, could it make you more susceptible to colds or more, you know, infections? I'm not sure that that's the case, because they use fish oil as part of a surgical recovery program to sort of boost recovery and reduce infections.
Yeah. He also says that EPA may worsen diabetic control.
Okay, well,
which I'm kind of confused
There is some literature that if, say, you have a regular diet and then you take, like, you know, 4 or 6 fish oil pills. Well, do the math there. You know, there's 9 capsules. There's 9 grams of 9 calories per gram.
Mm-hmm.
A capsule's a gram. So you take 4 or 6 capsules. Maybe you're taking 6 capsules. That's, what, 54 extra calories that you're adding to your diet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may be where they get that sometimes there's a deterioration in blood sugar control in insulin-dependent diabetics.
Okay.
But not in non-insulin-dependent diabetics, where fish oil appears to enhance insulin response.
Okay.
In my experience and in my opinion. So I don't really think it's warranted to stop using EPA and use exclusively DHA.
Yeah.
They're both beneficial, but you may want to tweak the ratios depending on what condition you're targeting. But for me, I just take a mix where it's about, I think it's 60% EPA and 40% DHA. I take the Orthomega. I think that's the ratio in Orthomega approximately.
I think so.
So I'm taking like 2 capsules a day, plus I eat a lot of fish.
Great.
So we still have a few more questions, which is good. We'll tide them over for next week. But so ends today's edition of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Thank you very much, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I want to remind you that look out for the release of our video on the seminar that we did on craving at the Hoffman Center. That should be up on our website, if not already, soon. And you can download the video and participate in that seminar, because many people complained that they didn't want to make the trek to Manhattan, so we videotaped it, and we'll make it available to our listeners if they download it. That's all for today. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.